Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I had a great experience last night. Now, last night was my birthday, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that. But in this particular moment, I'm not even actually referencing my birthday. I got a chance to do what many of you have done for a long time. I got a chance to sort of sit back and watch a little bit of Dog Nation's recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel. For those of you that may not be aware, we kind of began a new journey on our Before the Hedges program. It's presented by Kroger. And Jeff doing this at night now, really fun interview with Cedric Von Prawn Granger. And you got to check it out for yourself. Go to the Dog Nation Facebook page. The Cedric Von Prawn interview is up on YouTube. You can see that. Just check all of that out. But as I'm watching the show, I'm thinking, man, this 2021 cycle is going to be really, really fun. As we head towards the end of the year and the culmination of all this the same way that it just happened for the 2020 class, I'm already really excited about 2021. And I think part of that is because I'm ready for winter to be over. It's like been cold and rainy now for what seems like 1,000 years here in Georgia. And as the weather kind of heats up, not only does spring practice begin in Athens, and we're not too far away from that, by the way, the start of all of that. But in addition to that, you kind of also start to get that little camp circuit going a little bit more. A lot of these recruits start talking more about their process. They whittle down those list of finalists. And we're going to have some movement here coming up with recruiting over the course of the next few weeks that I'm just really excited about. I'm already liking a lot of what I see for the 2021 class. So watching Jeff last night doing this on Before the Hedges, thinking about all of this, it kind of led me to this point of, I think right now there may be five reasons why what we're about to see with 2021 recruiting is going to get really, really fun. So let me see if I can kind of rattle through all of these, and you can decide for yourself if you agree with me or not. Let me first of all start with Barrett Carter. Very impressive linebacker prospect out of North Gwinnett, Suwanee, Georgia. Carter here this week has dropped his top 11. Now, I am absolutely a gigantic fan of the double-digit list of finalists. Was it Amarius Mims the other day that had a top 12? And Carter's got a top 11. I don't know that anyone yet has topped our buddy Jay Hardy last year, who had a top 16 at one point. I just like all of this. You see that huge list of finalists. Obviously, George is one of those. We think if Carter had more than a top 11, George would obviously, or I should say less than a top 11, George would obviously be a little bit more in the more, I guess, rarefied version of his finalists. But nonetheless, Carter is just going to be a fun name to watch here. You know, we didn't do a lot of linebacker talk with Georgia with the 2020 class because Georgia had recruited so many really good linebackers in the previous cycles. Now, Georgia still brings in a guy like Mekhi Sherman, so it didn't completely ignore the linebacker spot. But for the most part, linebacker wasn't a big part of what Georgia did this past cycle. But I believe that's going to be more true, though, for 2021. I think that Carter is going to be a big part of that. In fact, I mentioned off the top of the show that I enjoyed seeing Jeff last night on Before the Hedges. And one of the things he kind of got into with Carter dropping his top 11, with Georgia obviously being interested in him, Jeff did kind of go into a little bit more detail about where things stand with Carter and why this is going to be a big name to know for Georgia in 2021. The linebacker from Suwanee. Let me let you hear a little bit of Jeff Sintel.
I think this guy is an indispensable piece for Georgia, a priority in the 2021 class. He's a guy that's rated right now as an outside backer. Number 6 outside linebacker, number 100 overall in the 24/7 sports composite. Just wait, folks. When the industry kind of re-racks Barrett Carter as an inside backer, that's what Georgia's recruiting him as. A lot of schools are recruiting him as, because he doesn't have that ideal 6'4", 6'5 length as an outside backer. And yet he can make all the plays on the football field. He works out with defensive backs. He works out with corners and safeties.
Jeff went on that same clip, and you can, by the way, see all of this as part of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger last night. But in the midst of that, Jeff went on to make a comparison between him and Isaiah Simmons, the former linebacker from Clemson, who was so impressive. He went on to talk about some of the athletic things that Carter's already done. You know, North Gwinnett's one of those elite programs in the state of Georgia, certainly north of downtown Atlanta. It's one of probably the top programs we kind of think of as North Georgia. Carter's already done some impressive things even before senior year there in a Georgia uniform. So there's going to be a lot to like about him, and Jeff kind of addressed a lot of that last night. But beyond this, when it comes to Carter, this for me is is not just about him being a really good player and a guy that Georgia thus far, I think, has a pretty good relationship. It's also an example of what I think you're going to see a good bit of in this upcoming class. One of the things I think is going to be really fun about 2021 is it might have a little bit more of a State of Georgia flair to it. There might be a little bit more Georgia-centricness, if that's a word, if I can make that into a word. There may be a little bit more of a Peach State vibe, Georgia accent to this 2021 class. Let me be really clear about something for a moment. I'm not against national recruiting. In fact, some of the guys for the 2020 class that are my, I guess, sort of most favored recruits, some of the ones that I have the biggest expectations for, some of those are national recruits. Guys, well, not just out of the Georgia footprint, but out of the South. You know, guys from California or up in the D.C., you know, Beltway area, you know, Mid-Atlantic region. You know, there are a lot of guys who are not from Georgia that I have big, high hopes for when it comes to being in a Georgia uniform. But admittedly, as a Georgia guy, there is just something a little bit fun to there being a little bit of a sort of, I guess, Georgia vibe. And I think the 2021 class may have some of that. Now, to his credit, when Kirby Smart talked about in-state recruiting of the day, National Signing Day on Wednesday, I thought he did a pretty good job of kind of explaining the best of both worlds situation of, hey, you know, you do want to be open for some national recruiting, but you also want to make sure that you are taking advantage of the fact that you live in a talent-rich state like the state of Georgia is. I thought that my own personal feelings on this were probably summed up pretty well by what Kirby Smart said the other day. Let me let you hear Smart from Wednesday.
Number one, we had more interest from out-of-state kids. So we had some national interest from players that came to camp and really performed well that in the past we might have lost out on. It might have been second or third on a national kid that was a really good player, say a Darnell, say a Kendall, say a Keeley. But we won a lot of those. The other part is we lost some in-state battles that were really, really good players. And so I think the two of those merged to just kind of happen at unique positions. Where, hey, we'd have taken the in-state guy or we'd have taken the out-of-state guy. It just so happened we got the out-of-state guy. But we're excited for those players. And, you know, there's been a lot of good out-of-state players play here at the University of Georgia. There's no limitation to your borders. But we certainly respect and understand how good our state is and what the high school coaches do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really fair. I think you want to leave the door open for both because we've seen, and we've talked about this in the show the last couple of days, the reasons in which Major Burns chooses Georgia or Warren Brinson chooses Georgia or Kendall Milton chooses Georgia, their reasons for choosing Georgia say a lot about them, and it says a lot about kind of the validity that the program has from a national standpoint. Georgia as a brand, I'm talking about the University of Georgia, UGA as a brand is just bigger than it was before, and the fact that recruits celebrate that, the fact they want to come to Georgia now, it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. I think you want to keep that door open for that to take place. And yet there is just also something nice about getting some easy recruiting wins along the way. And in the state of Georgia, obviously a lot of these are contested. Rick Gilbert certainly wasn't an easy recruiting win for Georgia. No, neither was Miles Murphy and some of those other guys. You're going to lose some of those battles. But when you do have the ability to kind of get in a car and drive, you know, an hour or so and go see someone, or in Kirby's case, fly around in a helicopter, it just does kind of set you up for a chance to get some easy wins. And, you know, when Dejon Edwards joins the class from out of Colquitt County and people in Moultrie say, oh, I watched this guy for 4 years, you're going to like him. Or if a guy like Barrett Carter goes to Georgia from Suwannee, when folks in Gwinnett County say, man, I saw this guy play a lot, UGA fans, you're going to love him. There's just kind of that nice tie when that guy from your hometown ends up being at Georgia, and I think there may be some of that when it comes to this upcoming cycle. Something else that I think is going to be really, really fun about the Georgia and the 2021 class, and listen, we've already seen Matt Luke have great success when it comes to holding on to big offensive linemen. There was a lot of that in the class of 2020. All those guys that Sam Pittman had brought in. The truth is, Georgia did a really good job of holding on to almost all of those. And Matt Luke gets a lot of the credit for kind of swooping in quick and kind of acting as a closer to make sure those commitments stayed in place and those commitments turned into signings. However, beyond that, I think there is an opportunity now to see what Matt Luke can do as a long-range recruiter. For offensive line guys, that's always been crucial, those long-range relationships. When you think about some of the names that we're going to hear about in the future of the 2021 class, guys like Amarius Mims, guys like Micah Morris, guys like Terrence Ferguson, to see Luke potentially emerge as a figure different from Sam Pittman. There'll be no yes sirs. The kind of shtick that made Pittman famous Luke's going to have a different kind of shtick. He's going to have his own gimmicks, his own things. But to see him emerge as a face for that position group for Georgia, much the same way that Sam Pittman once did, I also think that's going to be fun as a part of the 2021 class. In fact, the clip from Luke that I love actually predates his time coming to Georgia. It's not from the interview that I did with him in January. It's back at his time at Ole Miss. He was talking about making that transition from being a position coach or a non-head coach to being a head coach. And in the midst of that, he described one of the things that I think is going to be really valuable for Georgia in this upcoming 2021 class. And let you hear a little bit from Matt Luke.
That's the part I enjoy. I enjoy the relationship part of coaching. That's, to me, that's what I'm good at, and that's what I enjoy doing. And it's just a much more broader scope and getting to know more people instead of just focusing on three or four. You're more worried about the big picture, but it's all about building relationships, and that's the part I like.
Yeah, I mean, that guy who loves building those relationships, to see him do that now, not in kind of like a speed dating version of that, which it had to be for Tate Ratledge and Broderick Jones and all those guys, but this sort of like, let me relax, get to know you a little bit, to see him become the kind of, and it's unfair to compare anybody to Sam Pittman because Pittman was so good at this for such a long time for Georgia, but to see Luke become a version of that for the 2021 class, I think that could be a really fun thing to see. And then to kind of keep on this theme of things I'm really looking forward to for this 2021 class, you know, Georgia's in the midst right now of rebuilding its brand from a quarterback standpoint, right? Jake Fromm was the starting quarterback for Georgia for a long time. He's not here this year. It's going to be Jamie Newman, or it's, you know, a guy like Carson Beck, a part of that competition. A guy like Dwan Mathis as a part of that competition. And then the 2021 class will be the sort of next chapter of, hey, this is Georgia rebuilding itself from a quarterback standpoint. And when you do bring in a five-star, the way that Georgia has with Brock Vandegrift, and a guy that, by the way, is also from the state of Georgia, but when you bring this guy in, one of the things that you get a chance to do is kind of see what a five-star quarterback can do for you on the recruiting trail. I certainly get the impression that Vandegrift's going to be an active part of the recruiting process. He's going to want to be at camps because I think he wants to make a push to be as elite of a recruit as he can be viewed as. There's obviously some prestige involved in that when it comes to the quarterback position. And when you are there, when you're talking to these other recruits, it just gives you a chance as a five-star quarterback to kind of have those coattails and let people kind of ride along on that journey with you. Jeff Sintel caught up with Brock Vandegrift not all that long ago. They had a conversation. Vandegrift kind of talked about Georgia from the standpoint of feeling like a home for him, not too far from the place where he currently lives and the place where he's grown up. And the feeling that he has about Georgia in terms of the connection it's going to be for him, you certainly get the sense that this could be very useful for Georgia in a recruiting standpoint. Seeing a five-star out there recruiting for you, paying big dividends for the class of 2021. Here's Brock Vandegrift.
And that was probably the main thing. I'd been thinking about other options closer to home for probably 2 or 3 months going into like December, and I prayed about it and I talked about it with my family. But then when we were at the dinner table, every family member in Alabama, the great grandparents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, stuff like that, and I don't know how we got to talking about it. I didn't say anything about it. I guess it's just the Lord's timing. But someone was like, "Man, Oklahoma's far away," and I was like, it is, and I couldn't go to sleep that night. I was thinking about it, and I was like, I got to do something about this. I was like, I got to stay closer to home so that the people I love can be able to watch me, and I can still go hunt in Alabama on the weekends and stuff like that.
I mean, I love the way that Brock Vandegrift kind of describes the process of talking himself into Georgia being the place that he needs to be, and to have family members and everybody gather around and go through the process of saying, you know what, Oklahoma's just too far away. And if Oklahoma's just too far away, then for some other recruits, maybe LSU's too far away. Maybe Alabama's too far away. Maybe, you know, just pick any program you want to pick that Georgia might be recruiting against. To listen to the way in which Brock Vandegrift came to the belief that Georgia was the right place for him to be, it seems easy for me to imagine that Vandegrift might also be good at convincing some of the guys, his contemporaries here in this 2021 class, that Georgia is also the right place for them to be. I think Vandegrift's presence, that five-star quarterback in the mix here for the class of 2021, I think that's one of the things that's going to make this recruiting cycle really, really fun. And let me give you kind of one more quick one here. The other thing about 2021 that I think is going to be really interesting to see is, I mean, go back and look at the last few years. Georgia was third in the country in 2017, but putting together the kind of point total, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite, in a lot of the years have been good enough for number one overall. 2018, the Dogs were number one. 2019, Georgia finished second. This past year, coming back to build a number one class once again. To watch Georgia maintain that momentum, something that a lot of programs have not been able to do. You can make a case right now that Georgia's out-recruiting everyone in college football, maybe only by a slight margin compared to the top-end programs like Alabama, Ohio State, and you know those in particular. But you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who's recruiting better than Georgia currently is. And the 2021 class would be another opportunity for that to be put together. And for Georgia fans who are kind of hungry and ambitious for that national championship to come, putting together another class in 2021, the way that the 17, 18, and 19 classes have looked, the 20 class there as well, all of a sudden at that point in time, I think things around here are getting very interesting, and really no one can say they've brought in more talent than Kirby Smart has since he's been on this campus. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. It's great to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Radio Noon, Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Ref, or as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Really glad to have all of you with us here today, and really appreciate Meriwether and Tharp making it all possible. Now, let me be very honest with you here for a second. We just, the top of our show here today, talked a lot about fun topics, right? Georgia putting together another elite recruiting class, finding a way to build that the way that it has been the last few years. We could talk about that for hours. Something that does not feel as much fun to talk about is the subject of divorce. I totally realize that. And yet, the thing I also realize as well, in an audience as big as ours is, unfortunately, it's just a fact of life that a few of you right now may find yourself on the doorstep of having to make this decision, coming to grips with the fact that you may be about to do this. And if you are, first of all, my prayers for you. I also want to tell you that my friends at Meriwether and Tharp really can be an advocate for you. And I don't say friends lightly. I'm very, very thankful to count a lot of the folks there on the staff at Meriwether and Tharp as a very good friend. And I think you'll find them to be a tireless advocate for you. This may be your first divorce, but they've been through thousands. They can guide you through the chaos. They can give you options, strategies, and they can make recommendations to put you back on a path that you need to be. So here, let me give you a website. It's theatlantadivorceteam.com. Go to theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp, and you'll get a chance to get back on a really good ground, a really good footing here as you move forward after a very difficult chapter. I hope you'll check them out. All right, we're going to get Buck Ballew, the former Georgia quarterback, here coming up in just a minute. Before we do that, let me take some time to go around the doghouse, and I thought that Connor Riley had a good piece. I guess it was yesterday on DogNation.com, looking at the Georgia-Alabama game coming up in September and the fact that ESPN has kind of highlighted this as one of its top games for the 2020 season. We like the off-season content. We like looking ahead to the upcoming stuff. We'll do this later on our show today about some of the other SEC games going to make ESPN's list. But I did want to spend a minute kind of talking about the hype that's kind of already building for this Georgia-Alabama game. And a point that I think is true that's going to make the overall feeling of this game maybe a little bit different than you might expect. I think there's an assumption amongst Georgia fans that Georgia has more to prove in this game than Alabama, because Georgia's lost the last two times it's played to Alabama. Georgia's restless for a chance to win a national championship. Fans themselves are certainly restless. So I think there's a sense in which, man, Georgia goes into Tuscaloosa with something to prove. Can I make a point real quick, and you can tell me if you agree with this or not? Isn't it fair to say that Alabama truly has more to prove in this game than Georgia does? And I think that's a distinction that matters. Because, let's face it, I don't know that you can point to any game in the Kirby Smart era that has kind of had the feeling and the vibe around it the way this Tuscaloosa trip in September will feel. I mean, there's going to be a huge Dog Nation invasion. It's going to be like this really big thing. And yes, Georgia went to South Bend in 2017. I get all of that. But that's a Notre Dame team that only won like four games the previous year. You know, that was a unique experience, but it was more of a tourist attraction. At least at the time, it was thought to be that way. More of a tourist attraction than a big-time college football spot. But Bryant-Denny Stadium in September is not exactly that way. Bryant-Denny Stadium in September, given the history these two programs have against each other, given what Alabama has been under Nick Saban, this is a real kind of circled date on the football calendar. The fact that ESPN's already writing about it, I think, is the proof and the example that you need on that. However, in terms of the atmosphere being intense like Georgia fans expect to see, what if there's a little nervousness? What if there's a little anxiety on the part of Alabama? After all, Georgia may not exactly know what it's bringing to the table right now, given there's no Jake Fromm and given that, you know, Georgia's got a new offensive coordinator and probably needed a new offensive coordinator after the way that it performed in the 2019 season. But is there any more certainty as a part of Alabama right now? After all, Tua Tagovailoa is not there. And Alabama's not quite sure he'll be turning to as a quarterback. And if you don't have Tua Tagovailoa as that high-powered quarterback anymore, then is the identity that Alabama's kind of pledged itself to over the last couple of years, can it maintain that? Or can it try to reinvent itself, going back to more of a defensive-oriented, running game-oriented team, the way that it was previously before Alabama kind of got in bed with Tua and the high-powered offense that Lane Kiffin kind of brought to bear there in Tuscaloosa? I think it's right to hype this game. And obviously on the Georgia side of this, you understand why Georgia feels like it has a lot to play for, why fans are very curious and maybe eager to see Kirby Smart become the first former Nick Saban assistant to beat his old boss on the field. But I'm not quite so sure Alabama has any less to prove. In fact, they may actually have more. And in the early stages of this game, if Alabama seems like it's not on its way to proving that kind of stuff, that it really can still be a national contender in the post-Tua Tagovailoa era, that intense stadium atmosphere that you might expect from Bryant-Denny, it might not be quite as loud as you think. Something to think about as we get towards September. Good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. We're very busy with guests today. It's a former Georgia tight end, Troy Sadowski, coming up later on the program. I want to talk to him about a piece that I wrote yesterday at DogNation.com, his feelings with the tight end position, including some very interesting things about the five-star recruit, Darnell Washington. We'll do that with him. But for now, always a great thrill when we get a chance to have the national championship-winning quarterback, Buck Ballew, as a part of Dog Nation Daily. Let's do that right now. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. Of course, it's great to have you with us. It's always fun for me to get a chance to talk to Buck Ballew here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp, the former Georgia quarterback and a guy who's still a terrific voice when it comes to addressing this team and kind of everything going on. Buck, we appreciate you being a part of the program today, and I hope you're doing well. Thanks for being back on with us.
Hey, back at you, B.A. Just spent some time this morning looking at Kendall Milton and Mikael Sherman, two of these five stars coming in this 2020 class. Really impressed with both of those guys.
Yeah, it really is amazing, Buck, how Kirby has kind of kept this recruiting machine working. And, you know, Kendall Milton's an early enrollee on campus right now. It certainly seems to my eyes. I saw some pictures of him again last night because he was at the basketball game. I think one of the things about the program right now, and Georgia's not the only program that does this, there are a lot of them, but you get these guys on campus, get them into a nutrition program, get them into a strength program, conditioning program, and the ways in which the bodies can change so quickly. Now, Kendall was already in good shape, but it seems like he's in, you know, kind of extra good shape, already plussed his physical condition already. It's really amazing the transformation that occurs for these guys so quickly once they get on campus, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You've just taken it to a new level, and these guys, I'm sure, are excited about earning their way, and it starts quickly. Everybody's, you know, they know who you are when you step on campus, the rest of the team, and they're anxious to test you out a little bit, see what kind of guy you are. So a lot of challenges for all these freshmen that will be arriving before the start of the season, and I tell you, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of these guys.
Let me talk to you about the quarterback position here for a moment, because I think a lot of people are also curious about how that's going to look for Georgia this year. You know, a transition away from Jake Fromm, a guy we got very used to seeing. Certainly the expectation is, I think anyway, that Jamie Newman, the transfer from Wake Forest, is the favorite to win that job. And just given the way that he's played, given the fact that it'll be a part of a new offensive coordinator, there is a chance that offense looks a good bit different this year. So if you don't mind, I guess just give me your thoughts about the current state of the quarterback situation and maybe some expectations you might have for the Georgia offense.
Well, just looking at Jamie Newman and what he did a year ago at Wake Forest, you know, I was really impressed watching him play the game. And The RPO comes to mind. I mean, they did it a little differently there with the Demon Deacons, a little slower developing RPO where he would run the ball between the tackles. But I tell you, that comes in handy down in the red zone. I really like the way, too, they spread the field, and Newman did a good job of determining where his best matchup was and gave that receiver a chance to make some plays on those 50-50 balls down the field. So not sure yet, but apparently it looks like Newman is a really good fit for what Todd Monken wants to do offensively. And certainly Georgia will incorporate the quarterback run into the offense, which is exciting, too. I'm excited to see Carson Beck. I've studied and heard about this guy for a couple of years now, and have a former teammate off that national title team, Joe Kremens, that has seen this guy grow up down in Jacksonville and develop as a quarterback. And he seems to have everything you need to be successful. So I'm anxious to see him come the spring. And then Dwan Mathis, I think I'm with everyone else, including the coaching staff, wondering exactly what they have as far as Mathis and his skill set goes. He's obviously had some challenges. But I tell you what, man, it seemed like a year ago or two, right? I mean, they're worried that you went in the quarterback room and there's three bodies in there. Now I think they got about 10 or 12 guys in there.
It certainly seems that way, Buck, and there's no doubt about that. When it comes to Mathis for a moment, you know, obviously we don't know about his health situation yet. We hope that he's makes his return to full health. We can get a chance to evaluate him as a quarterback. But if we assume for a moment that he is going to be healthy, that the situation with the surgery that he had to have, if that's all healed up good, how much of a benefit is it for him that he spent a year on campus already? Even if he wasn't able to play, was practicing some, and I think by the end of the year even scrimmaging some, but if he's doing those kinds of things, getting a chance to be on campus for a year, how beneficial will that be for him when he gets a chance to finally insert himself into a competition, knowing that he's got something that Carson Beck doesn't have right now, which is a year under his belt, a chance to kind of, even if it's a different offensive system, still a chance to kind of get more acclimated to college life? How much will that help Mathis eventually?
Well, I think it will help him. You know, just the experience of, being around the campus, knowing the guys. All these quarterbacks are starting at square zero, right, with the offense, with what Monken's bringing in here, so it's a fair fight there. But, you know, just being comfortable, I think, is a really big thing for a quarterback. And, you know, these other teammates know you, too, so that's a big advantage. You know, we saw Jake Fromm come in and basically take over immediately. And, you know, I think, if you look at 100 quarterbacks, there's probably two or three that are really ready to step in as a freshman in college and do everything you need the quarterback to do to win big. So it just makes Fromm look even better, looking back on what he was able to take on. But
yeah,
it's an advantage. Just the comfort level comes to mind with the offense, what the defense is doing. You've got to, instead of guessing what the defense is doing, you know exactly what they're doing. Year number two through the program. So it should be a big advantage for him.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And Carson Beck, of course, getting a chance to be an early enrollee right now. And, you know, we've heard him talk about that experience. George has published some recent videos with him where he's discussed that. But, you know, we've seen Georgia in the last couple of years in some cases maybe move away from quarterbacks because they weren't going to be able to show up and be a part of the early enrollee process. And when you have a chance to be in campus in January and kind of leading into spring practice, getting a chance to kind of go through that, that's also a, kind of a nice advantage, right? Even if Beck does end up becoming the starter this year because Newman's too difficult to unseat, that's a great learning opportunity that will make him, I'm assuming anyway, more experienced in season when he finally does get a chance to play some this fall. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's running the scout team during bowl practice, so yeah. He got a taste of it, and I know he's looking forward to spring, getting out there and showing the team and the staff what he can do. Again, I'm really impressed with the skill set. He, you know, reminds me a little bit of Peyton Manning as far as his pocket presence, and, you know, he can make all the throws. He moves around a little better. Saw him, doing a little more of that his senior year here, running with it some more and showing some of that skill set off. But I think Joe Burrow, Luck, guys like that, similar skill set. You know, this guy obviously has already earned the respect of a lot of these freshmen in this 2020 class with his recruiting abilities too. So everybody's that, man. This is exciting as the turnover with the offense and the quarterback spot. And I'm just like everybody else. Can't wait to see how it works out.
Let me finish with this, Buck, if you don't mind. There's also, I think, some curiosity of just how different things are going to be. Even taking away the transition to a new quarterback and all the new blood, as you mentioned, that Georgia has in that quarterback room. It's also Todd Monken now, who, if you look at what he did with, like, say, the Tampa Bay Bucks or his time as head coach at Southern Miss or offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, his tendencies have clearly been a good bit different than what Georgia has been prior to this under Kirby Smart. I guess let me ask you, how much do you want the offensive philosophy to change? How much do you think it needs to change? And if you had to guess, how much of it do you think will change this upcoming season compared to what we have seen from the Dogs the last few years?
Well, I got a kick out of hearing Kirby say that, hey, we're running the same plays LSU's running. They're just running a little better. And, you know, Monken's got this rep for wanting to throw the ball vertically down the field, and I sort of chuckle at that too. I'm sure that, you know, the ex-offensive coordinator really liked throwing it deep too. But think about the SEC title game. They go deep first three plays of the game, if I remember correctly, and had chances to make big plays on all three plays, and the receivers just not able to do it. So, you know, this game's got to match up with the personnel. And yeah, I think this wide receiver core coming in, you got some guys that could make an immediate splash, like Rosemead, who's very polished, coming in. He can get off that press coverage. We saw our George Pickens had to learn these things during the course of the year. Arian Smith looks like a good fit at the slot, running that underneath stuff. We saw Mecole Hardman running. Jermaine Burton looks to me like the most talented, skilled receiver out of the group. Excited to see what he does. And Justin Robinson looks like he's a player too. So Darnell Washington at tight end. This is whoever the quarterback's going to be, and I'm guessing it'll be Jamie Newman to get started here. He's going to have a lot more weapons around him than Fromm did a year ago.
No, I think that's exactly right, Buck. I appreciate you being here on our program today. And for those who are in the Atlanta area, they want to check you out on the radio or maybe find you on social media, how can people get a little bit more Buck Ballew in their lives?
Well, we're on Twitter quite a bit working, at Buck Ballew 8, and then the Buck and Kincaid Show on The Fan. Noon to 3, 20 years running, man. We're still at it. Get the app. You can listen anywhere, anytime. DA, always a pleasure being with you, buddy.
Yeah,
keep
Buck,
up the good work.
Thanks so much, Buck. It's great to talk to you. Appreciate that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So it's always one of my favorite things to do on the program is kind of look at the way that the hype is building. And by the way, great stuff from Buck Ballew, the former Georgia quarterback, a terrific guest to have on the program, and just a guy with terrific, terrific insight around UGA, and also one of those guys that's kind of fun to kind of catch up with in the offseason. Because as I said, you know, the way in which the ball kind of gets rolling, the way in which the narrative starts to form for the upcoming season, this time of year, is always really fun for me. And that's one of the things we try to highlight when we go around the SEC, or as we call it, cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And speaking of them, I wanted to take for a moment to mention one of the great ships in their fleet, something that you've got to check out for yourself if you haven't seen them. I'm talking about Oasis of the Seas. This is the most awarded ship at sea, and it recently underwent the biggest amplification ever. Now, what is an amplification, you may say? Amplifying the ship simply means reimagining them and adding some new things, making them bigger, making them better. Then if you've experienced the ship before, you've not experienced it like this. Let me give you a couple of examples. Ultimate Abyss has been added. It's the tallest slide at sea. Can you imagine being a part of that? 10 stories, you're plunging down. Adding Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. We love the idea of a sports bar on a ship at sea, right there with the ocean around you. That's so much fun. You've also got other kinds of, like, you know, nightclub bar venues like Music Hall, the Lyman Coconut, Bionic Bar. We've got the robotic arms. Just a lot of really fun things. You need a vacation. We're talking about this in my household as well, when we're going to be able to be on one of these Royal Caribbean cruises. So contact your travel advisor or reach out to my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. The number to get in touch with them is 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. You can get in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority. Get your Royal Caribbean cruise vacation planned. And by the way, make sure you tell them you heard about them right here with us on Dog Nation Daily. So let me highlight a few of these other SEC games that ESPN has mentioned as the ones to watch for this upcoming season. First of all, one of the games that gets mentioned is Texas at LSU coming up on September 12th. Now, Here is what I think is interesting about LSU really against anyone, but in this return date between the Longhorns and the Tigers, especially given the fact that there's going to be a little bit of Texas hype this season after the letdown year a year ago for Tom Herman, exactly what is LSU going to look like? Because we've been kind of come to conditioned to believe that once you win that national championship, once you do that, you're kind of in the club, and you do like Alabama's done, like Clemson's done, you sort of hang around there, you know, year after year after year. But there was so much turnover, so much change for LSU. Is that really a possibility? Replacing quarterback Joe Burrow, replacing Joe Brady, Scott Linehan, and I guess Miles Brennan, the tandem are going to be tasked with doing that. Is LSU still national championship good? We may find out on September 12th against Texas. Then ESPN highlights Auburn against North Carolina also early in the season. I think that's an interesting game for Georgia fans in particular because this is a different kind of year for UGA, one in which you will be playing Auburn much, much earlier than you're used to playing them. You'll be kind of going with them in October where it's been November in the past. And what is Auburn? Also in a kind of a weird transition year. For LSU, the transition's on offense. You lose all that talent, quarterback, play caller, everything else, or at least passing game coordinator. For Auburn, it's about a defense where Kevin Steele's going to make a whole bunch of money, but there's no Derrick Brown there anymore. A lot of those pieces that you've come to, you know, get used to seeing in that Auburn uniform, they're not quite there anymore. Is Bo Nix ready to take that sort of next step in year two there in the program? I think that's a game that's pretty interesting to kind of highlight when it comes to that. Obviously, Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin gets on here a lot. It's one of those deals where I think that Lane Kiffin is a lot more interesting when he's not coaching somewhere big, right? I mean, think about Kiffin when he first left Alabama. He's active on Twitter. He's talking real big and everything like that. But it's almost like when you put him back in a high-profile spot, you get a guy that you're kind of reminded of, oh, well, he's had some issues. Oh, you know, he's not always thrived in the spotlight. You know, there were some weird moments for him at Tennessee. Kind of got himself in some hot water with Urban Meyer, ended up taking a big blowout loss. You know, talked a big game and ultimately wasn't able to back it up. The Tennessee program, I believe, actually kind of regressed because of the year that Lane Kiffin spent there. All the expensive assistant coaches that they were kind of left holding the bag for once Lane Kiffin departed. This is one of those deals where I think that Kiffin's a good play caller. I think he was a good offensive coordinator at Alabama. But as a high-profile head coach, sometimes the steak doesn't exactly match the sizzle, if you know what I'm saying. So you see Kiffin and Ole Miss showing up here a lot. And obviously that's why Ole Miss hired him. That they kind of want that attention that a guy like Kiffin brings to the table. But I'm just not quite so sure that the results themselves are going to actually kind of work out all that way. Obviously, there's a lot more SEC games on here. I'll put a link to this. We post the show a little bit later on at theworldfamousdognation.com. By the way, here's a game to think about. Speaking of Tennessee, how about Tennessee and Oklahoma also coming up in early September there as well? So it's a fun time. There is a lot to think about in terms of what the upcoming season might be. ESPN does a good job of kind of highlighting some of those games. So as I said before, if you didn't get a chance to read the article, when I post the podcast, I'll make sure I put a link to that there. But for now, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp, as promised, want to bring in another former dog. Always great to be able to do that on our show as we get ready to say hello to the former Georgia tight end, Troy Sadowski, former All-American with the program. Before we hear from Troy Sadowski, though, I do want to remind you that you can see Dog Nation Daily Live coming up Friday, February 28th. Let me tell you about the 38th annual Atlanta International Auto Show. It returns to the Georgia World Congress Center, Building C, from February 26th through March 1st. And as I said before, we're going to be live there on Friday, February the 28th. Now, we'll be there when the doors open at noon, so please come by and say hello. Of course, the auto show features the latest new cars, SUVs, and trucks from over two dozen manufacturers, as well as great special attractions like Cousin Eddie's RV from Christmas Vacation, or exotic cars from Caffeine and Octane, and a whole lot more. Adult tickets just $12. Kids 6 through 12 are just $6, and kids 5 and under are free. There are also discounts available for heroes and seniors. Go to GoAutoShow.com for tickets and details. That's GoAutoShow.com. You know, one of the things that I said, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show is, I've written at DogNation.com a piece about how I think UGA fans would be excited if the Falcons, who need a running back, would draft DeAndre Swift. We haven't seen a ton of former Dogs end up playing for the Atlanta Falcons. You spent most of your NFL career elsewhere, but you were initially a part of the Atlanta Falcons organization when you first entered the NFL. Now, at the time, you didn't know exactly how that was going to work out, but as someone who, you know, from the state of Georgia, played at UGA, was it fun for you to get a chance to at least begin your NFL journey as a part of the Atlanta Falcons?
Oh, absolutely. It was getting a chance to play in front of the local crowd was always a big plus. And like you said, you never know what's going to happen, when you're going to get drafted, where you're going to go. But to be able to stay at home was definitely a big plus for me.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, of course, we all obviously remember the great work that you did as part of the Georgia program. And, you know, obviously the tight end position is what you did there to such great effect. And now as Georgia transitions, what we think anyway, to a new offense, maybe a little bit different kind of play caller, Todd Monken in that role there. This is a guy that's been a little more up-tempo, you may say a little bit more sort of air raid style spread, at least in some parts of his, you know, coaching past. Do you get a sense for how the tight ends are going to be used at Georgia going forward and what that role is going to be? We've kind of gotten used to seeing two tight ends on the field together at the same time in the previous years under Kirby Smart. I'm not quite so sure that's much a part of the plan here moving forward. How would you expect tight ends to be used now with a brand-new offensive coordinator, one who has a little bit different, at least the sense that I get, a little bit different offensive philosophy than what Georgia's had in the past?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I was there, we were blockers first, receivers second, and we knew that, and we accepted our role in the offense, and it's kind of evolved a little bit over time. But now, I mean, they have talent on the roster, and then bringing in a guy like Darnell Washington and his skill set and his abilities, I mean, they have that opportunity to maybe go with a one tight end formation, move him out, flex him out a little bit. And, I mean, you're talking 6'8", 260 pounds. That's a pretty big target right there. But to be able to take advantage of that, looking forward to it. I think the offense is going to put up a little bit more number wise when it comes to that, because sure. When you have that new element that we're going to have with a dual threat quarterback, you know, as long as Newman comes along like that and does what everybody expects him to do. I think it's going to be an exciting season.
One of the things that Kirby Smart has talked about in the past when it comes to your position, the tight end spot, is to really have the football delivered to you, you need to be a matchup nightmare, right? You need to be able to run past guys or leap over them. You just need to be able to do something physically that allows you to get open when you're battling against these elite athletes, especially in the interior of these SEC defenses. It probably goes without saying, but is it safe to say that when you're a guy like Washington who has that size and the speed to go along with that, getting open in the middle of the field is just made so much easier by that kind of athleticism matched by the kind of size that you just don't see from a lot of players at that position, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it goes with the wide receivers as well. I mean, the biggest key is, can the receiver, whether it's a wide receiver or a tight end, can they create separation? Can they give the quarterback a good look when they're coming out of their break? And that's why you see the Alabamas, the Oklahomas, LSU, they have those receivers that are creating separation and they're making it an easy throw on the quarterback, and the quarterback's getting the ball in the hands of these guys that can make things happen. And that's one of the things that I would like to see Georgia do a little bit more, is get the ball in the hands of these guys that can run with the ball after the catch.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great thing to see. The other thing we've kind of seen Georgia do at the tight end spot over the last couple of years, this year's going to be another example of that, is Georgia looking to find experience at that spot when they can. You know, bring in Eli Wolf last year as a graduate transfer tight end. This year it'll be Trey McKitty from Florida State. Obviously, as you said before, Georgia's actually, at least in terms of the numbers of players involved, pretty deep at this position. A lot of folks want to see more of John Fitzpatrick, want to see more of Rylan Godey, for instance. Brett Scyther is a guy that Georgia brought in as part of the 2019 class. And yet, somehow, Georgia continues to value the opportunity to also add a guy in that sort of grad transfer spot who's played that before. Why do you think experience matters so much at the tight end position, given the fact that that's the spot that you know really well?
Well, because they're asking a lot of these guys. Not only do you have to play the Y position, you got to play the F, the H, the X, and the Z, depending on what type of formation and personnel that are in there. So there's a lot that you have to learn when it comes to that. So, you know, a lot of people think that it's just, you know, you line 11 people up and they just beat the crud out of each other, and that's part of it. But everybody has a specific thing that they're supposed to be doing on every play. And if everybody does that, it runs like a well-oiled machine, and that's what we're looking for. So when it comes to the tight ends, they're asking them to learn a lot more than just the tight end position. They have to learn all these other different positions. And coming in there, I understand that with the transfers, you know, I call them plug-and-play players.
Sure.
Those are great. We can bring people in that way to help when it comes to filling gaps, when it comes to experience and letting some of these younger tight ends mature. But I think what we have on our roster, we just need to get them coached up. That's the biggest part. I mean, the Kirby Smart and his staff are doing a phenomenal job about going out there and recruiting and who they're recruiting and getting these guys to come in. But once you get them on campus, you got to coach them up, and I think that's the big part of it.
Yeah, it seems like, Troy, and we'll finish with this, you know, Georgia's collecting this talent at such a rapid rate, and yet in terms of what Alabama's doing, what Clemson's doing, now LSU kind of in that fold, you know, we've never seen more good players congregated on so few teams. And so I think your point about needing to do something with the talent you have is a good one, just given the fact that that talent advantage isn't quite as vast as it would have been in the past with the kind of players that Georgia's put together here, because those sort of top four, top five recruiting teams are just getting way more than their fair share when it comes to really good players. And so when you play in an SEC championship game or a team like a Clemson or an Ohio State in a college football playoff, it's hard to have a talent advantage over them, because at least it seems like they're also recruiting really well too.
Oh, absolutely. You're seeing a group of about five or six schools that, like you said, the talent is pulling up. The parking lots are full of talent, and it's just amazing. I mean, to finish with the number one ranked SEC and number one ranked national recruiting class, and then last year what we were number one in the SEC, two in the nation, that's pretty impressive. So they're doing what they need to do to identify the talent and get the talent there. But, you know, it is, you got that top group, top tier five or six teams across the country that are dominating, and the talent pool for them, I mean, it is just, they're loaded with sharks. I saw the other day that Major Burns made a comment that sharks swim with sharks, and I love that. And you got to love a kid with the name Major Burns. So I'm expecting big things from him in this recruiting class, and look forward to seeing, you know, they got a lot of them on campus right now. That they'll be able to participate in the spring, and just to see how this team comes together, it's going to be nice and exciting to see.
Well, Troy, I will tell you that we love having you on the show. We just love hearing from the guys who've done it in this uniform, and we have such great memories of seeing Between the Hedges. You're obviously one of those names. We appreciate the great career you put together there at UGA, and the fact that you're still a big fan of the program that you played for, and the fact that you spent a little time with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. So thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate you being here, and I hope we get a chance to speak to you soon.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. Anytime. Would love to come on.
All right, good stuff there from Troy Sadowski, the former Georgia tight end. All right, good stuff here today all the way around. Thanks for being here. And, yeah, I guess something I better mention, although I didn't really want to. Another disappointing basketball loss for Georgia, right? And this one of, like, maybe the least competitive of this series of losses against South Carolina last night. I'm not quite sure what you do with that all the way around. It's probably especially not a great look that a team that you beat earlier in the year, Georgia Tech, seems to be getting better, beat Louisville. They're doing it with defense. They're doing it by rebounding. They're doing it with some older players. It's just a completely different formula than what Georgia seems to be putting together right now. You know, I'm just not quite sure what to say about Georgia basketball at this point in time. It needs to be better than it is. You know, I guess I'm going to choose to be patient here. But it's a little bit of a mess right now. There's no question about that. Let me also remind you, something that's not a mess, something that's great, Gator Hater Updater. 1,202 days. Thanks for being here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.